Brother Matt, he's out this morning preaching at Brother Dylan's church. I think that's in Marion, if I'm not mistaken. Brother Dylan's son, Billy Dylan, got married yesterday, so they were up in, is it Virginia or West Virginia? Virginia. He was getting married up there, so be in prayer for Brother Matt as he's up there. I think he's doing Sunday school and Sunday morning preaching both services. All right, let's go ahead and get started this morning. I'm going to read you this citation here. No, not a citation for a speeding ticket, but a citation, another type of citation. The President of the United States, in the name of the Congress, takes pleasure in presenting the Medal of Honor to Jacqueline Harold Lucas, rank Private First Class, U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, 1st Battalion, 26th Marines, 5th Marine Division. Place, Iwo Jima, Volcano Islands, 20 February 1945. Entered service at Norfolk, Virginia, born February 28, 1928, in Plymouth, North Carolina. Here's the citation. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity, at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving the 1st Battalion, 26th Marines, 5th Marine Division, during action against enemy Japanese forces on Iwo Jima, Volcano Islands, 20 February 1945. While creeping through a treacherous, twisting ravine which ran in close proximity to a fluid and uncertain front line on D+1 day, PFC Lewis and three other men were suddenly ambushed by a hostile patrol, which savagely attacked with rifle fire and grenades. Quick to act when the lives of the small group were endangered by two grenades, which landed directly in front of them, PFC Lucas unhesitantly hurled himself over his comrades upon one grenade and pulled the other under him, absorbing the whole blasting forces of the explosion in his own body in order to shield his companions from the concussion and murderous flying fragments. By his inspiring action and valiant spirit of self-sacrifice, he not only protected his comrades from certain injury or possible death, but also enabled them to rout the Japanese patrol and continue the advance. His exceptionally courageous initiative and loyalty reflect the highest credit upon PFC Lucas and the U.S. Naval Service. You know what the interesting thing about this? If you've ever read Medal of Honor citations, it's, I say run-of-the-mill, but not that Medal of Honors are run-of-the-mill. But it sounds very similar to many Medal of Honor citations. The interesting thing about this citation is not only is this person from North Carolina, he was 17 years old when he did that. 17 years old. Society at times says 17-year-old. Well, they're kind of in between that. They're old enough to know better, but still, I don't know, they're too young. I was looking through the Bible at children of the Bible. I think about Naaman's maid. She was the one that recommended Naaman to go and speak with the prophet so that he'd be healed of leprosy. How old was she? The Bible doesn't say, but I think she was young. I think about David there in 1 Samuel 17. You know, he was a young teen when he fought Goliath. He was preteens possibly when he fought the lion and the bear. I think of King Josiah. You know how old he was when he began reigning? 8 years old. 2 Chronicles 34:33 says, "And Josiah took away all the abominations out of all the countries that pertained to the children of Israel, and made all that were present in Israel to serve, even to serve the Lord their God. And all his days they departed not from the following the Lord, the God of their fathers." He was a young man, and he still served God. I think about Joseph in Genesis chapter 39. You know, he was hated by his brothers when he had the first dream. He was hated again by his brothers when he got the coat of many colors. He was sold. He was then bought in Egypt into slavery. He was exploited by Potiphar's wife. He was forgotten in the prison. And he still demonstrated great maturity. How old exactly was he? Scholars will debate with you exactly how old he was, but he was a young man. I think about Daniel, there in Daniel chapter 1, taken away from home, taken away from his common surroundings. And then you know the story throughout Daniel's life, placed into a senior level of administration over a great, vast kingdom. Turn your Bibles this morning, 1 Samuel 17. I want to look at a case study of David. The setting here, 1 Samuel chapter 17 with me this morning, of course, is David. Three older siblings are on the front lines of war. David's older brothers are sent to war with the Philistines, and David is sent to check on his brother and then engages Goliath in battle. You know, we don't know exactly what the age of David was. We do know that he was one of eight sons, and only the oldest three were sent to battle. We'll see that in 1 Samuel 17. And you might logically assume that the reason why only the three oldest were sent is that maybe the other ones were too young for war. We do know that he was only 30 years old when David became king. Some scholars have placed David as young as 15 when he fought Goliath. That would mean, if he was 15, he must have been younger than 15, because when he stood before King Saul, he said, "Your Honor, I have fought a lion, I fought a bear, and I have won." So he was younger than 15, if that is correct. 1 Samuel 17, verse 17. 1 Samuel 17, verse 17. "And Jesse said unto David, his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how their brethren fare, and take their pledge." David was a very intelligent young man. When you go through a traumatic situation or a battle for your life, and I don't know how else you can be but battling for your life when you're fighting a lion or a bear, it kind of grows you up pretty quickly. You go into those deep situations, you're going to become aware of your surroundings. David knew where he was heading towards. He wasn't, you know, singing "Skip to My Loo, My Darling" through the minefields of Vietnam. He was very acutely aware that he was going to the front lines of the battle when his father told him. And he exhibited obedience in the face of potential harm. 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 36. "And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him." Picture the wording here. "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and they took a lamb out of the flock, and then I went out after him." That means David didn't go into the midst of the flock. The lion or the bear had already taken the lamb out of the flock, and David goes and pursues after the lion and the bear. He was pretty well informed of danger. He knew what he was getting himself into when you attack a lion and bear. Maybe my 7-year-old Stephen might not exactly know, oh, a nice little kitty cat when he looks at a lion. Oh, a fuzzy little teddy bear when he looks at the bear. No, this was a very well-informed young man of the danger that he was going into, and he chose to do it. You know, David's obedience was not a one-and-done type of thing. Too many times I've seen, and you've seen as well, when we get another command, we've been told to do one thing, and then our supervisor says to do something else, and we forget about the initial command. Look with me, 1 Samuel 16 and verse 11. 1 Samuel 16, verse 11. "And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither." You know, David's occupation was shepherd. And he kept a focus on being a shepherd for those sheep, to the point that you might even accuse Jesse of forgetting about his son in the field. David didn't forget about his responsibilities. As we, as even older than he was, we get into the routine and we start forgetting about the details. We stop forgetting about the details. Samuel had to ask him, "Are there anybody else? because God sent me to your house to anoint the next king. It wasn't the first seven. Is there anybody else? Oh, yeah. There's one more. David, let's go get him. Maybe this might be the one. David's obedience did not cause him to forget his responsibilities. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 20. We're doing a lot of running. I apologize this morning. Right after Jesse told David to take the ephah of corn in verse 17 and 18 and carry the 10 cheeses, verse 20 says in 1 Samuel 17, verse 20, David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper. The word keeper there is a very interesting word. David didn't just randomly pick any old person and hold out a sign out, "Help wanted, I need a keeper for the sheep." He needed a person to keep, to guard, to observe, to give heed, to be a watchman over the sheep that his father had entrusted to him. And this is all happening, and this young man is arguably less than 15 years old. He said, "Yes, I'm supposed to obey. I'm supposed to." My dad changed my direction, said, "I'm supposed to go meet with my three older brothers. I'm supposed to meet them. But you know what? I still have responsibility to these sheep. I've got to go find a keeper." You know, if David rose up early in the morning, you might argue, which I think is a good argument, that it was the next day. Jesse said, "Go see your three brothers. Here's the corn, here's the cheeses." The next morning, he wakes up early in the morning and left him with the keeper. You know, he had to be observant of others that he might be able to leave and trust them to keep the sheep. He's 15 years old. We've got people, and I'll use the police department, we've got people that are 40-something years old at the police department that have no observation of other people. They wouldn't know a trustworthy person over an untrustworthy person. It scares me because I have to trust those other fellow men and women in blue to protect my life. The person standing there, as you're interviewing them, and they keep grabbing at this thing on their right-hand side. It doesn't take rocket science, but it tells you that something's on their hip. "Show me your hands." And they keep grabbing at this thing. What does that tell you as an observant person? You're dealing with a person that's known to be in gangs, known to be in drugs, known to be violent towards police officers, and they keep grabbing over here on their right-hand side. You're not a police officer, but what would you guess that they might be possibly grabbing at? Possibly a gun. Do you know for sure if it's a gun? No, but you have to observe people. It keeps you alive. David's 15 years old, and he understands the importance of having somebody that he can trust watch his sheep. He leaves them with a keeper. Just because he had to go out and go on a trip did not cause him to forget his ultimate responsibility of shepherd. There in 1 Samuel 17 and verse 26, notice David's statement here. "And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine?" Goliath had just come out and taunted the armies of Israel. "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" 15 years old and making a statement like this that many would relegate to childish ignorance. No, David's fearless statement was not one of ignorance. Remember, he has already fought a lion and a bear. Even though Goliath is, some put him around 10 feet, 9 foot 6, I've heard taller, right around, let's say, for Sunday school this morning, 10 feet tall. 10 foot tall, wonder how much he weighed. Well, he'd be awful skinny if he weighed 180 pounds. Maybe he weighed 250 pounds. No, that'd still be pretty skinny. 300 pounds maybe? Who knows exactly how much he weighed? A huge man. But you know, comparison? One fell swoop of a bear's paw can cause instantaneous death. I'm sure that Goliath was pretty strong, but if you have ever been slapped even by a strong person, yeah, it hurts, but it's not instantaneous death. But you know, David was focused on what was going on in defying the living God. David's fearless statement was not one made out of ignorance. Neither was the one in verse 32, chapter 17. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." These statements were not one made out of ignorance. Oh boy, I get to drive fast in the police car. It just cracks me up when these young police officers get out of their PTO training, out of 16 weeks. They've completed rookie school of 16 weeks of rookie school. Then they have to go through this training program at the police department. And you can see in their eyes and see in their expression, they just get all giddy because they get to turn on the lights and then the siren. And they get to go fast. It's just childish immaturity. They've not experienced the repercussions of, even though you're responding to shots fired, a person is injured, a potential murder scene, and you're trying to get there as fast as possible. If you run into a person, you have some civil liability if you run into another person. No, David understood. He knew what was going on. He knew that when he said, "I'm going to go fight that enemy of God, I'm going to go fight Goliath," he knew that there was potential death involved. "I've already fought a bear and a lion, trust me. I know what's going on. Let me speak from experience. I know what a situation like this, the dangers a situation like this can pose. But I'm still willing to go." He was qualifying himself. "I've already done something like this. It's not in a figment of my imagination because I watched my favorite superhero show, whether Superman or Captain America or whichever one that you personally like, and I think that I can go out there and I can be like Spider-Man and throw my spider webs out and I'm going to swoop in and I'm going to..." No, he knew what it took. You know, we know that, and we can even qualify that even more. He went out and got 5 stones. You know, he didn't go out and pick up machine gun bullets. He didn't know how to operate a machine gun. He didn't go up and he didn't even use Saul's armor. He said, "I haven't proved it. This isn't something that I can operate." For those of us that have been in the military, you always giggle when somebody says, "Oh, I know how to operate that. Let me show you how to operate that." You just giggle, and they get up there and they're trying to rack the machine gun and load it. And you're like, "Really now? Let me show you how it's really done. Let me show you. And you walk up and hit just the littlest button and the slide opens up. David said, "I'm going to use what I know how to use." And don't forget, he's only 15 years old, arguably. You know, David consistently declined to be redirected from the completion of his mission. 1 Samuel 17, verse 39. "And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, 'I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them.' And David put them off." Put yourself in that situation, honestly. We go, look, David sold the king. "I ain't going to use your stuff there, Your Honor." Do you understand the repercussions of what he just told the king of Israel? What is the king of Israel going to say is, "He doesn't like my gear, but I've got the finest of gear"? Do you understand the tens of thousands of dollars that I spent to get this awesome sword? This is double-bladed sword, you know, double-sided, two-edged sword. This is razor-sharp sword. Maybe I should use it on you, little David. You little impotent little twerp. You understand? Put yourself in this situation. You're standing before the guy that can say, pop his head off. And you've got a whole army that's willing to pop his head off. If he says, kill his entire family, you've got people that are willing to kill. The entire army is willing to kill the entire family. And here's little David, 15 years old. Sorry, Your Honor. Can't use it. I've never proved it. I don't know how to use this. If I look back on my life, how many times have I come across a potential obstacle even less than that one? I'm just not going to go out and finish my mission. Not David, 15 years old. Think of this young man here, private first class. You do understand what a private first class is, right? That's an E2. You get into the military as an E1 in enlisted ranks. So this is just above scum of the earth, for those of you in the military. This is just one rank above the lowest rank. And this 17-year-old said, I'm going to dive on that. Do you think that he knew what the grenade was going to do? Oh, yes, he did. Even at 17 years old, he said, I'm going to dive on that grenade to save others. I'll tell you, from personal experience, we've got 40-something-year-olds that I question greatly if they'd be willing to take a bullet for me. I wonder about in a spiritual application, what are you willing to give up for a marriage in trouble? Oh, now it got real. What if Sister Susie and Brother Johnny are having marital problems and they call you at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, we need to talk to somebody?
I'm still sleeping. Call me back at 6 o'clock when I might be able to open my up.
Are you willing to dive on that grenade in order to help that fellow and brother, sister in Christ save their marriage? Yeah, you're going to have to put yourself out a little bit. And maybe not. I just went to bed at 12 o'clock. Is that marriage worth saving? Think about what PFC Lucas could have said. You know those guys behind me? When I first joined this unit, they humiliated. They started making fun of me. I'm going to get back at them. No, you know what he said? I'm going to dive on that grenade. David consistently declined to be redirected from his completion, not only when Saul did it, but you know, he didn't even allow his older brothers to deter his completion. 1 Samuel 17, verse 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. That's right, when he was talking to the men about this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, now remember, his anger was kindled against David. And now that his anger's at to a fevered pitch, then he states these things. Why comest thou down hither? Do you think that's how he put it? Oh, why comest down thou hither? I don't really think that's exactly how he put it. You can picture in your mind, maybe they're saying, quote, nice words, but they've got a dagger at the end of them. Why comest thou down hither, you little twerp? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep of thine? Hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? Do you understand what he's questioning right there? David's a shepherd. He's questioning David and his competence. You know, that's one thing that will get a male enraged more than anything else, is you would question their competence. Didn't you forget about the sheep? And oh, those few sheep. You see the little barbs that he's digging in to David as he's talking to him. I'm sure he even had a Christian Baptist smile on his face. Oh, why comest down hither? Did you leave your sheep alone? Read in between the lines. You hear what's going on. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. Everybody loves a battle. Every good American red-blooded male enjoys a good battle. And David probably enjoyed one too. You hear David's reply? I can tell you what my reply would have been if it had been my eldest brother. When I was 15 years old, see here, he would have been about 21. Yeah, that would have been right about the same age. I remember an instance, something like that. Not exactly. I mean, we weren't about ready to battle Goliath. But you know what my response was? Oh, dear Timmy, I'm going to pray for you. Oh, yeah, that was exactly my response. Hang on, let me need to readjust my horns to get my halo straight. You know what I did to Tim, my brother? Pow! Right in the face. Oh, and the blood came gushing. That was my response. Do you hear what David's response is? Verse 29. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? Do you not see? You can hear the breaking of David's heart saying, hold on here, Goliath. Do you not see what's really going on here? Goliath is defying God himself. Is there not a cause? He wouldn't let his older brothers deter him from completion. 1 Samuel 17, verse 41 through 47. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about, he saw David. He disdained him. That's nice, politically correct terminology for utterly hated him. Or common vernacular on the streets is he hated his guts, is another way that they would put it. For he was a youth. Once again, we're qualifying this word youth. Is not the fact that when your brother Woody's age, he thinks that anybody younger than him is youth. This is a word that applies to youth, the youth room, the teen group. Not just the fact that I'm younger than brother Woody. This is a very specific term applying to young of age, teenager type of age range. And ruddy, and a fair countenance. Not someone that you would look at and go, that person has probably killed somebody in the past. You know the people. You know, you've walked in the grocery store and go, I wonder what kind of criminal record that person has. No, this is one of those sweet, innocent, little, you know, baby face type of young men. If the teens were in here, I'd pick on one of them in specific. No, I'm just kidding. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. We don't exactly understand this, am I a dog, in our culture. But this is calling him the lowest of the low. Dogs were not man's best friend during that time period. This is calling David out to the utmost when Goliath said this. David kept on going. David said, verse 45, David exhibited a great truth. Before we go to verse 45, if you want to turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse number 9. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for me, for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. David exhibited this great truth. Yesterday, and I apologize for this illustration, but yesterday was the Preakness, the horse race. If you were a betting person, according to all the betting statistics that they had on the TV yesterday, there was one horse, California somebody or other, some horse that they betted that was going to win. Everybody was putting millions upon millions of dollars on that horse. If you were a betting man, you would not have bet for David to win. This was a cut and dry case. 10 foot tall, against, picture in your mind, Caleb Myers. I don't know, let's see here, Caleb Myers versus 10 foot tall. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be going Caleb Myers. That's not who I would be thinking would win. But not only that, notice what David says in 1 Samuel 17, verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield. He doesn't say, I come to you with a slingshot and 5 stones. Notice what he says. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. Yep, I'm little. You've got all. It's like lining up the U.S. Marines against the Iraqi Guard. I've got friends in the Marine Corps that when they were there coming into Iraq out of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, the look on the Republican Guard's face when the Marines came, they had heard terrible, terrible things about the Marines. The propaganda that they were spreading was, in order to join the Marines, you had to give up your firstborn child. That's what they were propaganding to the Iraqi Republican Guard. They gave up. We're not going to, these people, they sacrificed their firstborn child. We're not going to be able to beat them. You've got all the armament. I'm coming into the name of the Lord God. David didn't focus on the fact that, probably he had a 96.8 slingshot score. He was an expert slingshotter that he could wear on his military uniform and stand at the position of attention and have over his chest a expert slingshot badge. No, he didn't. He said, you might have everything. I think of the psalm that says, Thou trust in chariots and horses, but I trust in God. And I know that's a John Schrock interpretation. David trusted in the Lord through this. He's 15, folks. 15. But the last thing that I want you to see this morning, it's one of those wonderful, I call them archbook stories. How many of you are familiar with archbooks? We used to have those, and you had all the little stories, and they were wonderful action stories. Daniel in the lion's den, you would get all excited. You would read through those Bible stories and get, David's a very good story like that, an action story of the Bible. But I think the application that we need to understand is, notice 1 Samuel 18, verse 1 through 5. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul. Notice what we have just gone through. David was a shepherd. David's dad said, Jesse said, go meet thy 3 oldest brothers. Give them the ephah of corn and the cheeses. David goes down there. He's faced with obstacles. He then overcomes Goliath, wins the battle. He then is taken and talks to Saul about all the events that had transpired. This is immediately afterwards. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. David created a friendship of immeasurable value at a very young age. we have coming up an opportunity to reach to young people across Shelby, North Carolina, and give them the gospel of Jesus Christ and create a friendship of immeasurable value, because we can't predict the future. As of this point, everything is going great in David's life. He's the country's hero. Saul loves him. He just conquered Goliath. He creates a friendship with Jonathan. Could God have used, don't be one of those naysayers and say, well, God could have used someone else. You're correct. He could have used someone else than Jonathan to save David's life and used another human instrument. But we can go through the next following chapters, 1 Samuel 19, 20, and so on, and see the vitality of David and Jonathan's friendship. You remember the story about Jonathan shooting his bow and arrow and shooting the arrows and telling his servant where to go, giving signals to David. But the application that I want you to think about is July 21 through 25. We've got a VBS coming up. We have the opportunity to create a friendship with young people. And don't count any of them out. Not the 8-year-old. Not the 15-year-old. Because do you know the youngest person that has ever won a Medal of Honor? Do you know the age? Quick trivia fact. 11 years old. Won the nation's highest award. 11 years old. Quick math there. Let's see here. 11 years old would be fifth grade? Is that correct? Somewhere around there? Fourth, fifth, sixth grade? They're still in King's Kids, folks. Young people that need a friendship. Young people that need adults to mentor them. And I'm not just talking about kids in the projects. I'm talking about young people that attend church on a regular basis still need friendship. Because we don't know what's going to be in their future. We don't know we can look here and we know, well, good thing that he had the friendship with Jonathan. We need to have that friendship as if the most horrific event is going to happen in our young people's life. Because I can tell you, December the 4th, 2013, let me tell you how the day started. I was tired. That's how most days start in my life. I got up around 12 o'clock, ate lunch with the family, and then went to work at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, I got a dispatch to go do a funeral escort from South Chester Street to GMP Old Section. So I had to go from Chester Street there at the funeral home, escort the funeral through the streets of Gastonia to GMP Old Section off South New Hope Road. Get out of my car. It was a veteran, so we render a salute to the veteran that had died. Got back in my car, got on my radio, Tubecker 40 City, 10-8 INS from the funeral escort, driving up South New Hope Road, northbound on South New Hope Road, and get a call for a check vehicle. Run-of-the-mill, folks. Check vehicle, a priority 3 call. One of the most mundane things of a police officer's life. Check vehicle. Okay, check vehicle. Where's it at, city? They give me the address, South York Street. All right, call this detective. All right, call the detective. Start going down. I get onto I-85, get off of exit 19, start going on west on Ozark. Call the detective. Hey, it's Schrock, you know, what's going on? Oh, it's a stolen vehicle, blah, 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 blah. Approximately 4:30 p.m., the man decides he wants to kill us. gets real, real quick. You know, we don't know what tomorrow may bring forth in our life. And I'm not just meaning in death. I'm meaning in decisions that our young people, church-going young people, will have to face. Let alone non-church people. Friendships prior to calamity is vital. 1 Samuel 19, 1-2. And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. Folks, it just got real. Fun and games are over. I mean, it used to be when David walked into a city, the parades would start. Things would be grand. All of a sudden, through all the, we can go back through and we know the story, the evil spirit upon Saul and everything like that. But everything has now changed. He's no longer the hometown hero. He's now the hometown villain. And Saul has people out looking to kill him. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. Are you making those friendships with young people that will last for a lifetime? Look back in your life. I challenge you. Look back in your life and think about those people that have made such a great investment in you. You know, it's usually those people that were probably the, quote, sternest with you at the time. I remember when we had our potluck meals at our church when I was younger. Mrs. Hibbett. We'd have our potluck meals. We'd had all the little rugrats, I mean Schrocks, that were there. And here's little Johnny Schrock. He's trying to butt in line in order to get whatever he wanted out of the thing. And here comes Mrs. Hibbett. She grabs me by the ear. She twists it, pulls me outside, and she says, look here, son. You never butt in line in front of an elderly person.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know what that taught me? Respect for others. I hated it at the time, I'll be honest. What right does she have to twist my ear and make it hurt to teach me a lesson like that? I remember Mrs. Randolph. She lived right behind us. We were going over there, knocked on the door, screen doors closed, the front doors open, and here's Johnny peeking into the house. Mrs. Randolph came out, you would have thought, oh my. Well, listen here, son, you never look inside doors. When you knock on a door, I'm like, what right does she have to teach me? But you know, now that I think back to those type of people, I'm thankful that they were truly my friend, teaching me something, helping mold me into a better person. I want to challenge you. We have a great responsibility for VBS. This is not just babysitting for July 21 through 25. This is the opportunity to build a friendship with a potential world changer, whether a church young person or an unchurched young person. Let's look to the Lord in prayer. Lord, thank you for this time in your word. Lord, help us. We're planning a VBS. But Lord, unless you help us, strengthen us, and guide us, it's going to be for naught. Lord, let us not trust in our planning, but Lord, let us trust in you. Lord, I pray that you would give much fruit for this VBS coming up. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. You're dismissed.